RFC 8890 was published in 2020, but it's surfacing on HN this week with renewed interest. And I think the reason is that its central claim feels more contested now than when it was written. The RFC is titled, "The Internet is for End Users," and was authored by Mark Nottingham, who at the time was chair of the IETF HTTP Working Group. The argument is that when internet standards bodies make decisions, they should prioritize the interests of end users above operators, above service providers, above governments.
Which sounds obviously correct until you trace the history of how internet standards have actually been made. The IETF has traditionally operated on rough consensus among technical participants, and those participants have overwhelmingly been employees of large technology companies. The interests of those companies don't always align with end user interests. HTTP, or 2, was in part designed to make certain server-side operations more efficient. TLS 1.3 removed cipher suites that enterprise networks needed for traffic inspection. Whether those were good or bad decisions depends heavily on whether you're optimizing for end users or for network operators.
Nottingham's RFC explicitly addresses this tension. It tries to establish a hierarchy. When interests conflict, end users come first. The HN discussion is interesting because it's drawing in people from different parts of the internet infrastructure ecosystem, and they don't all agree that this hierarchy is the right one or that the IETF has actually followed it.
One commenter makes the point that end users is itself a contested category. The person running a small business on a shared hosting plan is an end user in one sense, but they're also an operator. A university IT department makes decisions that affect thousands of end users who didn't choose the network configuration. The clean hierarchy the RFC proposes gets complicated fast when you map it onto actual network deployments.
What makes this worth discussing now, 6 years after publication, is that the web platform is increasingly being shaped by a small number of browser vendors who can effectively, unilaterally change what the web can do. The End User Interests RFC was written in an era when this dynamic was already visible. It's more pronounced now. The question of who speaks for end users in standards processes hasn't gotten easier.
The lean mathematics thread from Math Overflow is generating significant discussion among people in formal verification and proof-assisted mathematics. The question being asked is essentially, has the mathematics community locked itself into lean as the dominant proof assistant to such a degree that alternatives are no longer viable?
For context, lean is a proof assistant, which means it's software that lets mathematicians write formal proofs that a computer can verify for logical correctness. Kevin Buzzard's lean community and the MathLib project have essentially created a critical mass of formalized mathematics in lean 4. Including large portions of undergraduate and graduate-level mathematics. That mass of existing work creates enormous switching costs.
The alternatives, Koch, Isabel, Agda, Mizar, each have different design philosophies and different strengths. Koch has been around longer and has significant formalized work in computer science. Isabel has been used in operating system verification. The question being raised on Math Overflow is whether the concentration of activity around lean is good for the field, or whether it creates a monoculture risk, where the assumptions baked into lean's type theory propagate as invisible constraints on what mathematics can be conveniently formalized.
Several responses in the thread make the point that language monocultures in mathematics would be different from, say, programming language monocultures, because the whole point of formal verification is that the system checks your reasoning. If the reasoning system itself has blind spots or makes choices that privilege certain styles of proof, those choices can subtly shape what mathematical questions get asked and how they get answered.
The CEL engine implementation story, building a native C# version of the Common Expression language, is a different kind of systems work, but it sits in the same intellectual neighborhood. CEL is a Google-developed language for expressing security policies and access control rules used in Kubernetes and other infrastructure. Building a native implementation, rather than using the reference Go implementation or a port, means dealing with all the edge cases in the specification that the reference implementation papers overthrew convention.
The blog post from bsi.io is a detailed technical walkthrough of the implementation decisions, parsing, evaluation semantics, type checking, and it's a good example of the kind of deep technical writing that HN surfaces that you won't find in mainstream tech coverage. The author is essentially documenting the gap between what a language specification says and what you discover when you actually implement it.
The Parquet paging piece in DuckDB, specifically the choice between file row number and offset for pagination, is another one of those posts that lands in a very specific context but illuminates something more general. The TLDR is that if you're paginating through a large Parquet file in DuckDB, file row number provides deterministic results that don't break when the underlying file changes, while offset pagination has the classic problem that if rows are inserted or deleted, your page boundaries shift.
This matters because Parquet has become the dominant columnar storage format for analytical workloads, and DuckDB has become the go-to embedded analytics engine. The combination is showing up everywhere: data pipelines, local analytics, serverless query layers. Getting the pagination semantics right is exactly the kind of implementation detail that causes subtle data correctness bugs in production.